Hey everyone, welcome to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. In the Mobile User Acquisition Show, we talk about how to use mobile user acquisition strategies to grow your app quickly and capital efficiently. The Mobile User Acquisition Show is presented by me, Shamant Rao, Mobile Growth Leader and founder and CEO of the mobile growth consulting firm, Rocketship HQ. Each episode includes strategies, tips, and pointers from the leading edge of mobile user acquisition that you can use to unlock tremendous growth for your app in a sustainable and capital-efficient manner.
My guest today is Anish Shah. Anish is the founder and CEO of Bring Ruckus, a firm focused on attracting, vetting, and recruiting the best talent in growth. That includes digital marketers, product managers, analytics and design managers. What makes Anish's work so impactful is that he's a growth marketer turned recruiter. And that, as you probably know, is a very, very unusual combination. That skill set and experience allows him and his team to resonate with and understand what it truly takes to hire superstar growth practitioners. They've helped some of the fastest growing companies hire top growth talent.
I'm very excited to welcome Anish to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. Anish, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome, Anish. There's so much of your work that I'm very, very curious about, especially because I would think it's a very, very challenging job, both for yourself and for your clients, because growth talent is so scarce, as I've myself seen just in my own experience of the growth world. So tell us this, what are some of the key challenges that your clients face when it comes to hiring growth talent?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, really the very key kind of challenge is supply and demand, particularly in a city like New York. Growth hires are kind of more in demand than I think in any other city. Everyone's sort of looking to hire the exact same people. Right. So I think the difficulty is you just have such a small pool out there to choose from of people who've got the background of building up popular companies, of running all the channels, of really having that level of muscled memory. And so, you know, if there's 100 companies trying to hire 40 people, what do you do then? And also, I think with regard to growth people, especially the best ones, they're not going to sort of just show up on your doorstep. They're not going to apply to your job listing online. You have to sort of actively cultivate relationships with them, even if the timing isn't exactly right? You might not be hiring the exact role for them. They might not be on the market, but you have to put in a lot of work throughout your tenure as sort of like a founder or CEO if you're really trying to bring in the key executive growth hires. So it's a lot of work and you've got to go through a lot of conversations with people. So I think the core kind of channel is that whole supply and demand issue.
Yeah. And something you said in your answer jumped out at me. This was the phrase, cultivating relationships with potential growth hires. I'm curious, let's say there's a first-time founder, they're starting to see some traction, and they're like, right, I want to bring my first growth hire on. How would you advise that they cultivate relationships to start to bring that particular growth hire in?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I think one of the best ways to get started is to have a couple of good advisors on your team who already have a lot of those connections. And if you're raising a round to start off as a first-time founder, you can sort of go to one of your, you know, seed investors or anything like that, ask around. And honestly, if you are building a company and it's a legit company, you have a good product, you have a little bit of funding, look out in the market at people who have worked at other companies kind of in your industry, see who the big names are. And you could probably drop a few of them a cold email and say, hey, can I get some coffee? And I think you'll be successful in at least getting a couple conversations. And if they're kind of great connectors and if they know a lot of people in the industry, they'll be able to bring other people to your forefront as well. Obviously, you know, working with a company like ours, we'd sort of help bring some of those people to your doorstep as well. But I think it's important to have a few of those conversations at first to even understand what growth is. We were working with a company recently. They're not even officially our client, but it's someone I met at a sort of e-com growth event that was hosted by a few VCs. And it's a person who has a great company, a great product, something that's really unique to the market. But when I talked to him about all the different kind of growth channels that he was working on, they were so behind the curve in comparison to how great the product actually was. So not even trying to pitch him on working with us to hire a great head of growth or anything like that. I just basically set him up with four different really tier one growth people to have a conversation with so he can sort of just even get a landscape of what different opinions are, right? Because I think when you talk to four growth people, all are going to think they're all geniuses and they're all going to give you four different directions on how they would approach your problems. And I think it's important to get all of that information in, digested, and then start to think about how you would want to kind of go out to the market, whether you need a full-time hire, whether you need a really great consultant, whatever it is. So yeah, I think just the first step is really doing your best to get some of those early conversations with really smart people who have good experience.
Yeah. And you have to put yourself out there. And not to segue too much from our topic of conversation, but I think that's something you're very, very good at, just reaching out to people cold, because I feel like we met because you reached out to me cold. So I feel like that's something you're very good at, that I would even go so far as to say is one of your superpowers, right?
Thank you.
Sure. And to get back to questions, at what stage should a company start to look for their first growth hire? And what are the signs that a company should look for? And what position should the company look to fill around growth?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when you're talking about earlier stage companies, I really take sort of like Maslow's approach. At the very, very base of your sort of hierarchy of needs of building a startup, you need to have a great product that has proven to have gotten customers who really like what you're doing, to have gotten traction with them. And in one way or another. And obviously the term that's most popularized these days is product market fit, but you really should not be looking for a full-time growth hire prior to getting product market fit. And this is actually a mistake I've seen a lot of companies do. And it's actually a great source of candidates for us because, you know, companies sort of hire very early on with the promise of a great product, some great funding, whatnot. And then they put a product into market and realize, oh, this isn't exactly what the market actually wanted. This isn't exactly what our target customers wanted. And then they sort of have to pull back a little bit. And if they hired a really great growth person, that person just has to sort of sit on their hands because they don't have a product to actually grow. They can't run ads. They can't do anything else. So I think you really have to utilize whatever resources you have available, whether that's the founders going and launching the first few paid ads, launching the first few emails themselves, doing their best to hustle to get on a couple podcasts, build a couple partnerships, whatever it is, get your product in the hands of some people, get a little bit of traction. And it could be just from consultants as well, you know, bring in someone for 1 month to start sort of building out some of your early campaigns and make sure that they're sort of trending in the right direction and that you don't have any major product issues. You might, you know, sell your first 40 products through digital ads and then realize you have major inventory issues and you have to pull back, or your product is defective in some way or whatever it is. You know, really nail that core in terms of you have a product that people want, it works well, and that the basic levers are working well. And then I think you can bring a good growth hire in, because I think the goal of a growth hire isn't to sort of figure out the very, 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 very beginning of how to get your product into the first 50 people. That's really where the founders should be thinking about. The goal of a great growth hire is to add sort of fuel to the fire and take it to the next level and make it a viable business.
Right. And certainly hiring too early is a mistake very many companies make, very many startups make. What might be some of the other common mistakes that companies tend to make when they attempt to hire growth talent?
Oh yeah, quite a few. Yeah. We've seen a lot of different hires coming into different types of companies. I would say not necessarily understanding the stage where the company is at and bringing in talent who has most of their experience at a completely different stage. It's very tempting if you're an earlier stage company to bring in someone who has the pedigree and all the marks on their resume and, you know, sort of worked at the big popular companies within your industry and whatnot. It's obviously very tempting to bring a person in, but very frequently someone who comes from a very structured environment or maybe someone who is extremely senior, they're not going to know how to operate incredibly well within a startup. Obviously, there's plenty of people who have made that transition well and they've sort of proven what I just said wrong. But I see that going wrong very frequently, where you might bring someone out of a major company like let's say even a Google or other very, very large kind of more corporate structured, more hierarchical organizations. And they're just not people who are able to come in and not have very many resources at their behest. And they sort of struggle and it ends up just not being the right move. Either they get pushed out or end up leaving themselves. And then on the opposite end, I think it's also true. Right? Someone who's incredibly scrappy, someone who is incredibly entrepreneurial, someone who's not used to having to wait for permission, it's very tempting for a big company to hire those people because they want to move faster. Right. And they want to bring some of that startup-y entrepreneurial energy and some more innovation into their organization. But the reality is I've seen those hires go very wrong as well, where these are people who are not used to having to wait a few weeks to get permission on something they want to do. They're not used to making PowerPoint presentations just to prove why they should move forward with one of their objectives. So, you know, they'll get frustrated. They won't understand why there's so many power dynamics that they have to deal with just to get things done. And they'll move them too. So I think it's important to understand what stage you're at as a company, and you've got to make the right hire for the kind of stage of company you're at.
Right. Yeah. And certainly some of these mistakes can be very, very critical and they could set a company back very, very substantially. So to get back
Absolutely. And just to add to that, not only in terms of traction, but in terms of culture, when you hire, like, let's say a VP or C-level growth person, and there's actually a couple interviews I've had recently with people who had some of that bigger company experience. And then when I've chatted with the CEOs of those companies, it really did set back the culture of the organization, where they came in and, you know, within a big company, you can kind of rain down a little bit of terror on the employees below you and you can sort of get away with that. And within a startup, when you do that, it really demotivates people because you need to have that passion in there. So it can not only set back your traction, but it can also set back your culture into just really demotivating the people on the ground floor who are doing all the sort of day-to-day work.
Yeah. That can certainly be the case. To get back to something you said earlier, you said, look, the top growth candidates don't really apply to job boards. They literally have people knocking down their doors. Mm-hmm. So clearly, some of the top growth candidates have a lot of choice. What are some of the things that these top growth candidates look for in a position or company? You know, these could be obvious things, non-obvious things. What are some of the key things that these people look for?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing question. And it's one that I feel like a lot of CEOs and founders maybe don't get right. I think for the most part, when you talk to growth people who are seasoned enough, who have worked at a couple companies, who are well connected in the community and have heard other people's stories, you're going to have had an experience somewhere within your career that was very unsavory. And I've noticed that the very unsavory experiences are starting to sound, you know, fairly similar between a wide variety of people. I think one real core tenet to having an unsavory experience is that you just weren't taken care of by your CEO and your board. They did not go to bat for you, and that made your experience really poor at whatever company you were at, and that's why you moved on. So these days when I'm kind of really trying to convince the best people to join one of our clients, I don't go out there saying, oh my God, you're going to make millions off this equity. It's 2019. Nobody's making millions off of equity anymore. It's not 2009, right? Yeah. That whole pitch falls flat to the best people, and I advise every CEO, don't ever go out there to the market and say, I'm going to make you rich. It just feels gross and salesy. But instead, go out there and tell the best hire, hey, I'm going to take care of you. You're going to be given a job that is feasible. You're going to be given a job with metrics and goals and team, and all of that's going to be reasonable. We're not going to give you some moonshot to go after that you're never going to be capable of hitting, and you're just going to get frustrated over and over again. So yeah, I think when I'm bringing people in, I really pitch them that, hey, look, meet the CEO, make sure you grow a good relationship with them. And look, I'm letting the CEO know as well that they need to take care of you. These are the three or four pitfalls that I can see, that I can foresee happening in the role potentially if you do not take care of this head of growth hire. And so you need to be very aware of that and make sure you're communicating with this person before they come through the door that, hey, look, we're going to have a conversation. We're going to communicate about all of this, but all the way through, we're a team and I'm going to take care of you. It's not going to be hierarchical. I'm not going to, you know, have you come into this organization and just beat down on you week over week. If your metrics are down, you know, 2%, this is a journey. We're both going to take it together. And that's really how I've gotten a couple really strong people to join companies recently. And they weren't paid more than market rate, but they just had really good peace of mind joining certain companies.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that relationship, that collaborativeness is something that oftentimes gets lost in a lot of traditional hiring processes where some hiring managers are like, right, let's just put out a job description. People will come to our door. We will treat them the way we will. And oftentimes that doesn't work with some of the best candidates, as you pointed out.
Yeah, absolutely. Something like that actually works very well in our favor, right? So when a company kind of takes those sort of like lazy methods, so to speak, and expects something, you know, really phenomenal to happen, and then it doesn't. And then a couple of months later, they're like, wait, it's been 2 months. We haven't found anybody that we've liked. That's when a company will sort of come to us and find us and ask us to go sort of do our job to find them the best people. So job boards are the laziest way to apply for a job. Yeah. And I don't recommend anybody to rely on job boards and just use sort of single click, just like go and click every single application kind of method. You've got to get out there. You've got to meet people and you've got to kind of get a little more aggressive and a little bit more unique about how you're going to meet people. But yeah, those lazy methods have been great for our business.
Yeah, right. And something you talk about is how companies should position themselves to attract the best growth talent. You touched on some of that in terms of speaking about the kind of outreach you expect the most effective CEOs to be making. But how else would you recommend that companies position themselves well to attract the best folks? And what are some of the first steps that a company might take?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies don't do the work to figure out what is their unique value proposition. What about them makes them differ from other companies out in the market? Is it that you have a really impressive founding team? Is it that your product is in a unique market that nobody else has touched? Is it that you have really great investors? Is it that your Glassdoor reviews are sparkling? I think really figuring out those two or three unique value propositions that set you apart from other companies is really the way to go to stand out and get some people at your kind of doorstep. And also being a lot more direct about them. You might go to a company's careers page and they all look the same, right? You have that same like team photo where everyone's like throwing their arms up in the air and everyone says the same things about themselves that every other company does. But those pages are really an opportunity for you to differentiate yourself, not just look like everyone else. Don't just look at every other company and try to emulate it. Figure out what's super unique about your culture and dive into it. Don't be vague. Be as transparent as possible. Be as direct as possible. And I think that will actually kind of help you stand out. So for our clients, we actually build up full landing pages for multiple of their executive roles where we go through this exercise with them. We try to figure out what are the two or three things about them that's incredibly interesting to the best people out there and focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, everything you say, Anish, highlights that while hiring the best growth people is hard, it's by no means impossible. And there's a very clear path that a lot of founders, a lot of leaders can follow to get great growth talent to be positioned to attract the best growth talent in their companies. Anish.
Absolutely.
This was incredible. This was incredibly insightful. Thank you for being on the Mobile User Acquisition Show. I hope to see you around sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Shamath.
Thank you for listening to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. If any of this was helpful or instructive, I would love for you to leave us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This podcast takes a ton of time, effort, and love to produce, and I deeply value every review and every piece of feedback that you share. Thank you for listening, and I will look forward to sharing our next episode soon.